Right, so what I've realised is that, you know, I'm naturally a fixer and I want to try and fix people because I know what it's like to be broken and what it's like to not have anyone there to fix you. And so my best friend and I, we fell out because he wanted just to talk to me. And I always try to give him advice, give him solutions, try to fix him. He wanted me just to listen. And through this experience, I always found it very therapeutic just to listen. I literally must have listened to for like 3 hours of him talking. And so the gift of just listening is a very hard gift that most people don't have, but if you can master it, it changes lives. So growing up, did you have a nurtured relationship with your parents?
No, it probably comes from not having a choice. Great relationship with my mum, you know, but all very precarious. Yeah, and I think it was maybe a self-belief that came as a result of not having a choice any other way. I like the fact that this rambling chat started with listening.
Conversation is literally like energy.
Yeah.
Energy's like always getting bigger and smaller and just going over there and over here.
Yeah.
That literally is what conversation is.
Yeah.
Conversation is sound, sound is vibration. Vibration is just moving energy, right? So what I've realised is that, you know, I'm naturally a fixer and I want to try and fix people because I know what it's like to be broken and what it's like to not have anyone there to fix you. So naturally when I see like what I call a wounded animal just in the fence, naturally I want to set it free. And actually you're supposed to let the animal sort of learn its lesson, like not to jump through the fence, to recognise in future that that's a fence there. I'm not going to make the mistake of trying to get through the fence. Mm-hmm. And like you see like flies. I've got a yellow sticky thing in my bedroom because I've got plants and there's so many flies just sticking to the thing. And it's like, can you not see the other flies there? Like, do you not have the brain to see that there's flies there? Maybe that if they're trapped, you're going to get trapped. And so my best friend and I, we fell out because he wanted just to talk to me. And I always try to give him advice, give him solutions, try to fix him. And it's almost like he would talk and I cut him off and say, I know what you need to do. And that's not what he wanted from me. He wanted me just to listen. And through this experience, I always found it very therapeutic just to listen. As much as naturally you want to give advice and that you can help people, it's actually more therapeutic just to listen and relax and shut your brain off without having to try and think about, okay, I've got the solution here. And as a result, I literally must have listened to like 3 hours of him talking. Like, he used to just call me, he used to just talk, and I used to listen. And he used to get all the answers he needed to the point where he used to be like, is there anything else you should talk about? And I'd be like, no. And that'll be it. And so the gift of just listening is a very hard gift that most people don't have. But if you can master it, it changes lives.
Active listening. I think the thing as well is that by actually listening and observing expression and body language, then you'll hear the things that they don't say, which is the most important thing. And that's the bit that people don't often show or vocalize necessarily as well. And so you can observe and reflect back what someone is saying to you, and then you'll actually be hearing them, and people can really tell if you're actually hearing them.
Yeah, I find that the eye contact thing is very powerful, because just having eye contact with somebody often means you are listening, because it's very hard to look at someone in the eye and be thinking about someone else. It's just not really how the brain works. You're either like looking around and looking inside your eye over there, or you're looking directly at them. So holding eye contact is so powerful. Like, growing up, my dad always held eye contact with me. So naturally now, whenever I look at people, I'm just locked in. Often where people might feel uncomfortable because I'm just like locked in. To me, it's normal just to hold eye contact. But for people who say didn't have parents that maybe gave them eye contact, like, you know, they say when a baby's born, look in the right eye because it creates that bonding experience. I always had that. But the eye contact thing, I believe in the animal world, is the most powerful thing. Because if you look at like a lion and you've got a gazelle, the lion just looking at the gazelle can almost put the gazelle into a trance and make it submit. Doesn't need to chase it, attack it. Just locking the eye contact is enough. So what does that say? That there's energy coming off the lion's eyes that in the quantum field you can't, it's there but you can't see. But that's literally the power of the eye contact. Somebody feels like they're being heard when you're locked into their eye contact. And that's why you don't have to say anything, because every time they say something and it, you acknowledge it, you trigger off something, like a neuron frequency triggers off and it enters their field that you've recognized that. Yes, you've understood that. Yes, you've heard that. Oh, I feel that. Oh, I understand that. It's like almost silent communication. You don't have to say, yep, oh, absolutely, yep. Just listen, because like your eyes will squint a little bit when you're hearing something that they're saying that really resonates, and they just see it and they feel it. It's like mm-hmm. this silent communication.
When have you been in a position where you felt truly heard?
Well, I created the podcast because I had so much, I had Tourette's growing up. And then when I was 12 years old, I was on medication for it. 21, I learned something called The Secret. And then I came off the medication overnight, meditated for 3 weeks straight, and meditate half an hour every day since then. Otherwise, my energy will become so high, which stimulates so many thoughts, which creates the twitching, because mm-hmm. the twitching is just excessive, like, brain activity. And so the podcast was about me getting out everything that I worked out. Mm-hmm. So actually, I felt heard when I had the podcast and I could just speak freely. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that when you allow the people to speak freely, you give them what they want as well. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that, you know, as much as podcasts are great, learning new information, just talking, like, no one has the ability to talk, like husbands and wives, even friends. No one really just says, okay, you can just talk for as long as you want, and I'm just going to sit here and listen or not, just talk. No one does that, because they automatically want it to be their turn and they want to talk themselves. So speaking to other people and allowing them to talk and me doing the same thing, I felt heard. Mm. And as a result, they felt heard. And often, like, they just felt so therapeutic at the end, because for once they literally spoken for 10, 15 minutes, which in the real world, no one ever lets them do. Mm-hmm. That's probably it. I don't think it's a specific person. Mm. Yourself?
I just got distracted there thinking about how you managed to cope and recover from Tourette's through the art of meditation.
Well, actually, it was coming off the medication that healed it.
Really?
Yeah, because the meditation has stopped me from thinking about new stuff. So if I didn't meditate, I'll be thinking about so much, just mm-hmm. like, just brrr. But coming off the medication kept my brain in that state mm-hmm. where I couldn't process all the stuff I had in my head growing up, because whenever I would twitch, I'd take the medication, it would mm-hmm. slow my brain down, twitching would stop, so therefore the medication works, because the mm-hmm. twitching's reduced. But I'd wake up and have all the same thoughts in my head that I never worked out. Why are we here? Why do we go to school? Why is there a God? Is God a guy? How can he be a guy? Does he eat? What, you know, is there restaurants in the sky? Just never-ending nonsense of thoughts. And the medication, when I came off it, allowed my brain, like, for the first time in 10 years, to just have this freedom of wow. thought. And I could just work out everything, like, I'd had in my brain for 15 years in 3 weeks. And I just spent all day in my bed, literally laying on my bed, just working at everything from when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Until there was, I worked it all out. Like, if you do a maths paper, once you work out the maths, you've learnt it.
So was it a case of getting it out of your head then?
Yeah, it was certain just unanswered things. Thoughts.
Really?
Just millions of questions.
Do you not have them now, though?
No, because I meditate. I've controlled my brain to meditate so I don't think of new shit. If I want to work something out specifically, I'll work it out. But there's not this internal, like, driving along and I'm just thinking about, why did they put that skip there? Why did they not put it here? Like, you know, just nonsense. Mm-hmm. So the meditation is like being in control of the power button of the brain.
Yeah.
I can choose when to turn it on or off. Most people, it's automatically on and they're trying to find the button to turn it off, but their brain's like thinking, I'll just do that first. Mm-hmm. And this is their thing of like trying to get to the button here. It's like over there and they're trying to reach the button and then someone else comes in because thoughts don't end. And so the only way to control them is to not have them.
Yeah.
It's like a drug addict. If you're a drug addict and you're in, and you've recovered, you can't ever touch drugs again because it's too tempting.
I love thinking. But thinking in a meditative state, if you like, I really enjoy. Like, I really enjoy making time for thought. But equally, if I can, there's a difference between like thinking meditatively and thinking, like you say, without control. because that's when it can get destructive, or when your chimp brain can take over. But I actually really enjoy dedicating time each day to thinking, to not cancel it out completely, because then my brain is able to do that and all of the doors start opening and I see it as a bit of a spider's web, you know. But if I just allowed that to be open all the time, then I would be, you know, I'm probably, there's probably all sorts of, I don't know, again, I started meditating from a really young age, so probably without that, I may well have a very distracting mind. But yeah, I see it as a big room with a lot of doors that you can open.
When people say they talk to God, right? You know, they're in a situation and they need answers, so they go into their head and that voice gives the answers, and then your own voice will say, but why did this happen? And then you'd hear the answer back in the third person, which you could say is God. So, you know, I love thinking, right? Thinking, like, when you're thinking, you're creating so much endorphins and you're getting ideas and you're creating, like, everything's flowing. But for me, because I lived in my head, I literally lived in my head. I was constantly speaking to God, right? Speaking to my voice, working out shit. Drove myself to insanity because I've got very high energy and my brain processes information very quickly and I can remember things very quickly. It's dangerous, like having a high energy where you absorb everything, can see everything, and it's in your brain. You naturally want to analyze it. I lived in my head to the point where I didn't understand anything, had no friends, didn't understand people at school, teachers, reading a book couldn't watch films, because if I'm following a narrative outside, like the film, and I'm thinking about someone else, well, I've just missed that, what they're saying.
When did you first notice that that was a thing?
When I couldn't, like, focus.
Yeah.
Since I was, like, 5, 6, 7.
Really?
Yeah, because my dad always gave me the time and the energy to ask questions, and he'd answer, because his father figure, when he was 7, gave him answers to questions. So it was just question, answer, question, answer. So he naturally did the same thing to me. And I wouldn't encourage it for parents to give their children that much attention, because in the average world, when you go out into, like, normal life, most people haven't had that much time and energy and attention and like with their parents, because they're busy or they're just not there. So as a result of me having all these answers at an early age, just made my brain just see everything from an early age, that it's just more questions came into my brain. And therefore there was just no time to listen to what the teacher was saying or what the book is saying or the TV EastEnders is saying, because I always had someone else.
Yeah.
To the point where I drove myself to possession, literally, because I was just speaking to the voice of my head all the time.
Does your dad have Tourette's?
All my family have the traits, little twitches, little coughs. And so when I analyse that is, you know, if none of this thing is genetic, then why is it that we all have got, say, the little twitches? And it comes down to, again, they were all brought up with the same figure.
Yeah.
Who gave specific answers that most, say, parents don't have. He's a very, like, high up, wise person in, like, you know, military. Most people don't really have exposure to that world, so they don't really have those answers. So if you teach people, like, information, they're going to run with it. If you teach your child how to play golf at a really early age, how to do jiu-jitsu, how to communicate on stage, how to sing, how to play piano, naturally that's going to be in them. They already have that, like, performing ability. So when they get into, like, the real world, they're already really confident, and these kids are not. So if this kid gets bullied for being confident, it's because they see that kid is different, and then they bring them down. So again, it's really dangerous being exposed to something that society doesn't really have, even though for the individual in the adult world is a superficial, amazing trait, because you've got to get through the swamp first before you get there, if you get there. So yeah, you're all part of the same energy, like the gut microbiome. If your mother has, say, 500 gut microbiome, right, and she fucks it up with eating shitty food and has a kid, that kid's going to have, say, 250 gut microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to have be more prone to disease because they haven't got the gut microbiome to protect their immune. Whereas if, say, your mum had 500, she was really obsessed with gut, has a kid, that kid has now got a perfect 500 gut.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really genetics is, not genes. Genes can be changed and turned off and on, but the gut microbiome, if you change it with doing certain things, eating certain foods, that's really the barrier for all disease, not genes.
Yeah. And how, to what extent then do you think things like trauma, cortisol, stress impacts that?
So growing up, I used to be very stressed. And then I realized that the stress is just me overanalyzing and creating my own anxiety for something that doesn't exist. So if I was going to go on stage at drama,
mm-hmm.
I'd already be preparing what I'm going to say. So my heart is now pounding, knowing that I've got to say exactly how I visioned it. But when you get there, there's nothing, it doesn't even come anywhere close to that. And that's why I don't really plan what I say on the podcast, because if you start planning shit before, heart starts to pound and you sort of forget what you're going to say. If you just trust the flow process that whatever will come out and is what's meant to be in this moment, then it will. What was the question?
God knows.
Fucking hell. What was the
stress, cortisol, stress. And yeah, how that impacts.
Because I'm very aware how like toxic stress is.
Mm-hmm.
I never allow myself to get stressed. I've never been late since I was 21 to anything. I'm always an hour early. Try to be an hour early because I hate the pressure of being stressed. Because that's everyday life. People are stressed. So I'm never late. I'm always early. And as a result, I'm always in control of my energy, stress mm-hmm. levels. So stress is so bad. And I know that, you know, cortisol, even adrenaline, where you're excited and you're like jumping out of a plane, that's still an unnatural thing. Only time you're supposed to get that adrenaline is if it's like an animal's chasing you. That's really any time your heart's supposed to pound that much.
Yeah, but it is great.
It is great. yeah, it's a human life. You know, you want to experience as much as you can, but yeah, cortisol, got to stay away from that as much as possible.
Yes, you do. I don't. Because I am like base level very, very calm. And I actually need stuff like that to almost fire my cylinders a little bit. So like, I mean, I was late to this podcast. And I generally, I hope you weren't here an hour early.
That wasn't.
Good. Okay, that's a relief. Because I tend to do things, I think I'm, you know, it's the Mediterranean in me. But things tend to happen very, very calmly and very, very delayed. And so I actually actively crave that adrenaline hit because I don't have it otherwise, like at all. So I feel like we're almost at like coming at opposite ends of the scale, you know?
So when you say you crave it, as in if you don't have that adrenaline of something, you just would find it hard to get motivated or?
No, motivation is there all the time. So there's something slightly different, but I think what I don't experience is big enough highs. So I will, for many years, I would do something every year that would create the ultimate adrenaline. So whether it was jumping out of a plane or climbing a crazy mountain or, you know, those sorts of things. And that would fuel my fire for the year, if you like. It would be, I mean, I would do it weekly if I could, but it has to be quite extreme. So where things that might ordinarily bring people to a state of high stress or high excitement or high anxiety or nervousness is not something I ever feel. And I crave it. I'd like to feel nervous about things.
So nervous in a way where it becomes comfortable, like the excitement nervous for going on stage.
Yeah. That yeah. One. But I mean, I've spent my entire life as a performer. I have never, ever been nervous about going on stage. So I was surrounded by people at theatre school who, you know, some people would be sick with nerves and I could never understand it.
Yes, so that comes down to self-confidence.
Yes, but self-confidence also is something that is a learned thing. And I was never, I've simply never lacked it, if that makes sense. and not for any real reason.
So growing up, did you have a like a nurtured relationship with your parents?
No.
So you literally wrote that yourself and created that self-confidence yourself?
100% an avoidant attachment style. And so it probably comes from not having a choice. Great relationship with my mum, you know, but all very precarious and, you know, fueled with various family trauma stuff. And I think it was a self-belief that came as a result of not having a choice any other way.
Yeah, so what comes to mind is that two paths, path where it's kind of guided by someone else, and then once you get momentum and it becomes your thing, then it becomes your thing. Or you're literally, you know, like Eminem in Detroit, there's nothing else to do apart from rap, because the only thing they have to do is rap. So you have no choice. That is your path. That's your industry. Yeah. You can change paths down the line, but right now, rapping is your only way out. You've got to become the best rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a path is chosen, sometimes it isn't. And like, you know, it's not always the end goal, the process along the way. All these paths might lead to there. Like, you know, if you say you started off as dancing, you get into presenting, and then that then goes into putting on festivals, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It all links.
Yeah.
Like the ability to talk on stage, perform, coach, lead, it goes to there.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, that's the calling. That was just getting me there.
Yeah.
And then you get there and it's like, oh, actually, no, because that's not the calling. It's something else over there, which you only realise is there when you get there.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it comes down to just this never-ending process of thinking and doing, getting hold of that thought, as in, like, you thought about it, so you feel like, oh, I've just worked it out. And then there's something else to work out.
Yeah. I like the fact that this rambling chat started with listening.
I mean, the conversation is literally like energy.
Yeah.
Energy is like always getting bigger and smaller and just going over there and over here.
Yeah.
That literally is what conversation is.
Yeah.
Conversation is sound. Sound is vibration. Vibration is just moving energy.
Mm.
And we learn to communicate essentially back in the caveman days through feeling something and then making a sound and then recognizing that sound as a common thing that we know that means eat or mm-hmm. let's go to sleep. That means you have to migrate and find food, or there's an animal here, it's getting dark.
Yeah.
And then all these words become more familiar. And then we add other words like let's eat and walk. So it's rather than just let's eat and let's walk. It's that means eat and walk. Grab your berries, we're going. Right?
So you don't have Tourette's, you just have, okay, you were just talking caveman language.
Exactly, all these like, chicken, all these little sounds. It wasn't Tourette's, I'm actually a caveman, an unevolved caveman
yeah.
in a modern body.
Interesting what you were saying earlier about the energy.
What the fuck is that? Siri, shut up, we're doing a podcast.
The laser beam eye stuff. Yeah. That's I was listening to that recently, and about how there's quite a lot to support that, isn't there? As in that, you know, when you are conscious that someone is looking at you, but you can't work out why you know that they're looking at you, and whether, I mean, I do like the idea of the fact that when people look around, there's actual laser beams that
absolutely.
Come out of their
I
eyes.
See it.
Me too.
Yeah.
That sort of sixth sense of being conscious of it. But I mean, yeah, I think we'd be, there's a lot to support the energy. I mean, we spoke about it the other day in the sauna, didn't we, about energy of manifestations, of words, of things like that, and would be silly to not believe that there's something in that, you know, that everything creates. We know that everything creates an amount of energy waves, and to think that you know, eye focus, words, movement isn't doing exactly that and affecting more of a circle around you than we realize, maybe.
Have you ever done that where you're like just sitting down somewhere and you're looking at somebody and you go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and they just look over at you? You ever played those games?
No.
So I used to work at a restaurant.
You start doing it all the time then.
Yeah. It really does work, but it might not work every single person because they've got to be receptive to it.
Yeah.
Like their energy's got to be receptive.
Yeah.
What I used to do is when I used to work in a restaurant, we closed at 11 o'clock and there'd be a table left at, say, 10:45, right? And I'd literally be like that. 10:48, they're going to leave. And I'd just be like sort of feeling that movement. And all of a sudden it's 10:48 and you hear Linda go, right, we better go then. No, spots are getting late. Right? And I'd be looking at my clock and they'd be leaving that door before 10:48. And I'd be like just sitting there having my food. I could look at anyone in the restaurant and I'd be like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And whatever reason, they'll just look out there. Because that is the laser beams. Yeah. Like when you go in like Laser Quest and you see all the lasers,
yeah,
that's real. All the Wi-Fi signals or 3G signals, that is real. If you can see it. I just bought an EMF reader at home and go around my house like seeing what gives
that's
off the
addictive.
Most, seeing off the most energy, right? So I'm holding on my phone when it's on charge. I'm buzzing. The energy from the phone's coming through me, meaning I'm now taking the energy, which is
scary.
Obviously very bad.
Yeah.
And I put the phone down, it doesn't stop. But yeah, but like there's laser beams everywhere. And the same as words are travelling,
yeah,
and you're thinking about something, and then your friend calls you.
Yeah.
If you could see it, you might not look at people or stare at people if you could see the energy. I look at it like there's a bubble,
mm-hmm,
and when you look at somebody, you're like burning a hole in their bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at them enough, when they build up enough energy, it's almost like that smoke is coming from the bubble,
mm-hmm,
and all of a sudden, pop, and they feel it, and they look.
Can you please bring your EMF? Can you bring that, please? Can we just go around the gym?
Yeah. Like when you're holding onto the treadmill, right, and you're buzzing, you know,
you're
taking up the charge from the treadmill power. And obviously, the other reason why I got it is because I always go barefoot whenever I can.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something on the Instagram where some guy's standing on the floor, he's holding the machine, and it's resonating like X amount of EMF. Then he's wearing shoes, and the energy's gone right down. So the grounding energy he's not getting from shoes. And then he had like this metal thing that goes around the shoe, which connects to the ankle. So it means that he can wear shoes and get the energy from the earth. Mm. And that's what made me do it.
I like that. I would like to... Where did you get it from?
Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Not where everyone gets all their shit from. Yeah. Amazon. Stop. Amazon.
Is that up there with one of the most random things you've bought from Amazon?
No, I also bought an alkaline water stick the same day.
Right.
Where I can test my water. I bought a hydrogen machine, which basically you put your water in the machine and it creates hydrogen bubbles.
Okay.
And hydrogen is the next massive thing in water.
Yeah.
Which is in my bottle there, actually, that's from now.
Did you buy your sauna hat?
Yes, from Amazon. You see all the bubbles, right? It's hydrogen.
Yeah.
Yes, I got my hat from Amazon, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get my trunks from Amazon. but yeah.
You're budgie smugglers. And we're going completely off-piste, but, you know, I am intrigued by the sauna hat. And I have yet to see you wear it.
Well, I've been wearing it all week.
Oh, do you feel like it's helping you?
It does. Like when I'm in there, my ears start to burn.
For those of you who are watching, listening, it's a strange little teepee hat, isn't it?
Yeah, I basically like
it. Someone said the other day to us that you have to have it covering your ears.
Yeah, I mean, my ears do burn when I don't have the hat. And when I have the hat on, my ears weren't burning. So for whatever reason, the heat isn't going there. And it does help your ears.
Did you buy your Celtic salt as well?
Not yet.
We also heard that Celtic salt is better than Himalayan.
Yeah, so that'll probably be my next list of stuff. You know, I'm just starting to take electrolytes because why not?
Yeah.
But Celtic salt, different thing. Don't know if I want to have salty water.
No.
But, yeah.
So what's next for you?
Russell Brand's festival.
Yeah.
That's my end goal.
What do you think about Russell Brand?
Love him. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I, on the whole, love him. I have to say that the latest saga made me question things, but how much of that is media mayhem? It's probably 90%. Yeah, I'd like to meet him and be able to judge it for myself, or judge him for myself.
Yeah, so, community and people and in person reactions and energies, that's it. That goes back to the cave, right? Just around these people, eating with them, talking with them, that's it. So having like an event like community, for example, where you're around conscious people for 3 days, where everything's about love and joy and happiness, there's no anger, good food, good water, sharing wisdom, I can't think of anything better.
No.
The only problem is it's very expensive to put on. These people often live all over the place, right? Also trying to find their own tribe. They can't just piss off the whales every day, as much as like you'd love to have like land, and then you create like this little community where grow your vegetables over there, welcome everyone on, teepees all around, just make sure you clear up your own shit when you leave. Just like, everyone comes in. That's obviously the dream. That's not really how it works in reality. Constantly being around people like yourself can be a bad thing, because you just like become brainwashed of that's it and that's it. But just like the feeling of being around people that are just all about love and harmony and positivity and consciousness.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to live, you want to live with the best feeling ever. So yeah, you could learn more information if you're over there rather than being around all these hippie spiritual bubbles. But if I'm going to die in 3 days' time, I'm going to want to feel this tribe, not that tribe, which is talking about some new information, which in terms of information is great. I know some more stuff. In terms of feeling,
Yeah.
well, being around you guys, like just holding hands and looking at each other, like trying to read each other and make each other cry just by eye gazing,
Yeah.
that's how I want to die.
Are you going to come to my festival?
If I'm around, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
It's very important.
How did you, what made you get into that?
Whoa. Get into. Oh, that's a good question. I grew up. My mum was a Buddhist, is a Buddhist, but was much more of a practicing Buddhist when I was younger. And she chanted and meditated. So I learned, I was around that energy and information. One of her best friends is now based full time at the Tibetan Buddhist Center up in Scotland. And she's been in full time meditation, silent solo meditation since the start of lockdown.
In silence still.
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah, I know.
Really?
Yeah,
Hasn't said a
silent
word
solo.
since.
No.
Wow, 3 years.
Yeah. Joy Palmo. Yeah. She does a lot with people like Kagyu Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe, all of the top Buddhists, basically, from, yeah. Samya Ling is called this incredible Buddhist temple up in Scotland. Anyway, so that was my mum's best friend for many, 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 many years. And so learned a lot from her. So generally growing up, I understood the benefits of things like meditation, but I had no idea what, I mean, yoga didn't exist when I was younger. Obviously it did, but it just was nothing like it is now, you know. Breath work didn't, this just wasn't a thing. Nothing, none of it was a thing. So it was very rare, even as a child, to even be conscious of what meditation was. And then trained as a dancer, and then in 2014, I had a very innocuous fall and I broke my back. In fact, I had a fall and I broke my back, three prolapse discs, dislocated my pelvis. I completely lost all ability to function. Ambulance came, all of that malarkey. Didn't, you know, at that point it sort of was quite serious and I couldn't feel my legs and blah blah blah. And then as it turned out, I have a degenerative disc disease and that's why my, you know, my spine just to fall was like the worst thing that could possibly happen, and all sorts of problems. I've got these things called Schmuel's nodes coming out of my vertebrae, that coming out of my discs that eat into the vertebrae, blah 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 blah. Anyway, doctor said I had to stop all impact sports, and at the time not only was I dancing a lot, but I was a PT, I was doing a lot of boxing, and so overnight all of that part of my world was stripped off, and he said you have to do yoga and Pilates, or and that's it really. And I didn't question that, and instantly switched. So started, found a local hot yoga studio and started going, and within a month I was going sort of 6 times a week. I was completely hooked, and what I realized I was completely hooked on was the mental side of it as well as the physical side. And then within a year I was back in the gym, but I was still doing significant amounts of yoga and meditation, because my mental and physical ability as a result of that had gone from 0 to 100%. You know, I absolutely owed that transition to why now I am fit, strong, my pain management is really good, you know? And so, yeah, I completely fell in love with the benefits of that. Open up a yoga studio, and then was able to see the benefits of how imparting what I had learnt on others was doing. Then I trained to be a psychotherapeutic counsellor and spent the last four or five years studying and qualified in that. And then the next best thing felt like, you know, like, what else can I do with it? What else can I do with this information? And how can I bring people together who have gone through similar things, or, you know, are inspired in the same way by things that aren't just your atypical life exercise stuff. And our first year, we got a message. So one of our friends, or one of our guests, if you like, bought a pal who actually had tried to take their own lives a few days before. And on the day before the festival, little did we know, but as it transpired, he had wanted to go and do it again, but had been convinced to come to the festival instead. And we got a message to say that as a direct result of one of the talks that he had watched, he had completely changed his mindset and then wasn't planning to. And if nothing else, that was why we then carried on doing it for the years following. That was a really long-winded answer, but that's sort of how it all transpired, you know, and what keeps us motivated each year is if we can help one person from taking their own life, then great. And that's like baseline. And then if we can do all sorts of other cool things, then that's a lot of icing on top, right?
Yeah, like a lot of people, they, you know, try and focus on being the most famous, having the most money, affecting millions of people. But really it comes down to feeling. Helping one person can often be the same feeling as helping millions, the same as if you're on TV and you're speaking through a camera to millions, mm-hmm. or just three producers. You can't see that. So yeah. The feeling of just speaking to those three, or millions, or 5 million, or billion, or just 20 people, you can't see it. So the real feeling is that person right there, which is the one person that you can help. I think we're just always obsessed with more. More, mm-hmm. more is better, or what's the term? Less is more, something like that. It's the opposite, actually. But, you know, Joe Dispenza, right? Didn't even know about his backstory.
Yeah.
He meditated and he broke his back in like 5 vertebras. He meditated, didn't have any medication, fixed himself. There's actually a recent testimonial on his YouTube channel of somebody who broke 1 vertebrae, who was in hospital, supposed to go for treatment, didn't have the treatment, didn't take any medication. Doctors were like, okay, if you're not going to have treatment, you've got to go. And she was meditating. She was told about Joe Dispenza. And then she just walked out.
Yeah.
And so the reason someone says to Joe, why do you do it? And he's like, how can you not do it?
Yeah, I agree.
Now, if you know that this, what you've said or done has helped one person or many, that's an addictive feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, it's all about a reaction. Mm-hmm. How can you get like this natural drug and not want more of it?
Mm-hmm.
Hence why, like, just creating more of something that does good is always going to be better than one's own individual selfish needs. Because once you've got that feeling of satisfaction, fulfillment, I've got that thing, money, whatever, that's it. That feeling is it. Like, you have a billion, you want 2 billion, that feeling of money just becomes numb and it goes down. Whereas someone changing their life because of something somebody's done, that's a unique, different feeling every single time.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I've got, I mean, my dearest friend Matt is now my co-creator of Mindset Unlimited. And then his husband, Drew, does our sound baths and is like a super consultant for us. And the three of us are so not motivated by money that we potentially will never make money from it. But it's so low on the priority. It just does. It's not. It's just the least important part of it. You know, it's great if we do make some money from it one day. But it's just not. There's just no motivation financially, but motivation for just. Yeah, like you say, it's a bit like having a cure to the common cold and going, here we are, try this stuff.
So I will say, you know, if you had £1 million, what would you do? Because often, like, our decisions are somewhat based around money, because everything is about money. So if I want to make a decision on something, and I think, okay, if I had £1 million, what would I do? Meaning, that's the right decision to do. If you had, like, this cure for the common cold, and you were you had millions of pounds in the bank, and you could spend all year creating a festival and all the time and all the stress going into creating the festival. Mm-hmm. But you weren't going to make any money. But the feeling of doing that event, helping all those people come up to your office saying, oh my God, thank you so much, changed my life, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to get into meditation and mindfulness. You saved my mum. That's amazing. Whereas if you were like, okay, you're not going to make any money. In fact, you're going to be in debt. Most people probably wouldn't do it because they need to put their time and energy into something else that is going to make money to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So often everything is based around money, unfortunately. But if we took money apart and to put it aside, what would we do? And if you've got to have a purpose in life to do something, otherwise what the fuck is there to do? You want to do something that makes you feel good, and the only thing that I think makes you feel good is making other people feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't end. Mm-hmm. It's always someone else to make feel good. Just have a conversation with somebody on a bench, an old lady, someone at the bus stop, just change their day, looking at them and going, how you doing? Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll just walk past them.
Mm-hmm.
Something so small, like just going to an old man and be like, you know, here's a coffee or whatever. That's a feeling that some people would never experience in months.
Yeah.
Because it's, why the fuck would I give him a coffee? I don't even know him. Like, I'll get myself a coffee.
Yeah. How do you make your money?
In crypto.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, that's a very different world.
And, just crypto, basically.
Good, so you can do a whole episode teaching me the world of crypto then.
I could. I've been doing crypto for like 7 years now.
Wow.
And you know, the lessons of crypto is really, I've learned to trust my gut, because I realized that if you don't trust your gut, what you knew was going to happens. So the answer is, fuck, why didn't I trust my gut? So the opposite is that when you get this feeling to, say, put money in a coin, you're looking at the money like, holy shit, it will take X amount of time to make this and you could lose this. But my gut says do it. And I remember last time I didn't trust my gut, what happened? So it's like you're living on this unknown world of quantum, which is I'm trusting my gut is connected to the quantum of who else is observing this coin.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's big institutions and people focusing on this coin, the universe is picking up that they're acknowledging this coin. They want to buy this coin. They might buy this coin. How much money have they got to put in this coin? So the universe is doing the maths. If all these people put all this money in, how much would this coin be? That's the gut feeling connected to everything. And so, you know, through not trusting my gut, I've learned lots of lessons. I could have made hundreds of thousands of pounds by trusting my gut. Didn't, because of fear. So now the opposite is where if I get this feeling, it doesn't matter what I want to put in, just trust that gut.
Do you follow it with friendships, people, love?
How do you mean?
Trusting your gut.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah, I live off gut. I don't plan. I don't like to... It's always feeling.
Yeah.
It's never words. It's feeling. Like, I will jump into a situation, even though it doesn't really feel right, if I feel there's something to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a business relationship, whether it's someone you're dating, you know it's really not going to work, but you want to see what the universe has in alignment for you with this person. What you're going to gain from them, what you're going to learn from them, what they're going to learn from you. Even though the words are like, okay, you didn't want this or wanted this, this is the opposite to that or that, but yet you're feeling drawn to it. I know on paper this should never work. What the hell am I doing? Gut says do it. Just fucking do it. Jump in, hold your balls, and then just do it. Like with the coin, you know, just if you get this feeling to put it in some meme coin that could just disappear overnight, trust it.
Can you tell me what which coin for me to trust my gut with today?
Well, there is a coin. Again, my gut is different to everyone else's gut, because my gut may include, if this coin disappears, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, fair play.
Your gut might be like, well, I can't afford to lose that. So I trusted my gut, you trust me, but then that's not the right decision for you.
Yeah, okay, I understand that.
It's almost like my gut bugs are different to your gut bugs.
Yeah.
You might be able to have milk, whereas I'm lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
I can't have milk. Because my gut bugs are like, you're half Singapore, mate. Like, we didn't have cows till like 10 years ago. What's this doing? We had soy. Or was it tofu? That's also true.
You're half Singapore?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Which half?
No. my dad's from Singapore.
I love Singapore.
Yeah.
Bloody humid though.
It's very hot. It's like it's like going to the steam room, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
What? Someone else, right? I've always worn deodorant.
Yeah.
Because I know it's terrible, right? And I've come across this natural.
Yeah, I've just deodorant. Started wearing one as well.
And it's basically just completely natural. And I found that I don't sweat and I don't smell. So I'm like, why did I ever where chemically spray deodorant. So I started using that, went in a static dance, and I started to sweat so much. I'd never sweated this much in my life. Over the last week, I haven't worn any deodorant because I'm like, maybe I was just simply blocking my pores with the deodorant, where I'm trying to sweat out all this whatever, but I'm not able to because I'm constantly spraying more and more and more spray. So all of a sudden, I'm not wearing anything. And I don't smell. And my dad, he's also a singer. He can sing and dance all night, doesn't wear any deodorant, and he comes back and says, on my top. It's just like it's come out the wash. Nothing. Not a drop. And he can say it's my Asian genes where we're all skinny and light and whatever. Maybe. The point is that the man-made spray did the opposite, like the medication for me. It made my Tourette's worse. Thinking it's a solution, it made it worse. Spraying it with spray for like years and years and years because I think I'm going to smell, but it's actually because I never gave my body chance to naturally reperspirate naturally. That
There's a lot to be said for all of that. I've actually just started the same, and I don't know why I suddenly decided. I've known all the benefits of going chemical free on my deodorants for a million years, but I've never done it and did exactly the same. And I hope I don't smell.
That's why I keep opening the window, because there's this rock salt thing, right? There's this rock salt thing that I tried. And I have to admit, I absolutely stunk. But that's because I literally went from deodorant for 5-6 years to the rock salt.
Yeah.
But there's something happened at the Ecstatic Dance where I just literally was dripping wet, and I've never sweated that much in my life. And since then, I've not been wearing deodorant and I'm not smelling.
Really?
It's phenomenal.
God, I think I would still smell.
You still do smell?
I think I would. I don't think. How was your Ecstatic Dance experience?
So yeah, well, growing up, I used to go clubbing by myself. When I was like 18, 19, my friends used to go clubbing with me. They used to drive and I used to be stranded there 3 a.m. They just want to have sex and I want to go home, right? Out the kebab van for like fucking hours. And they're fucking about. They're drunk. They're at their face. I'm babysitting them. And so I thought I'm going to go by myself. So from 21 to 24, I used to go clubbing by myself 4 times a week, sober, drive, go in when I want, speak to anybody to gain this confidence. And I'm like, I wish I could just dance like that. Like a chimp all the time. But when I would do that, people would like move out, say, yeah, he's funny, high five. And then suddenly the energy would change. Mm-hmm. Almost like they saw this energy of confidence and it made them feel uncomfortable because they weren't confident. Mm-hmm. And then they would just disappear. And then there's this chimp middle of the dance floor dancing to himself. And I'm like, where does this exist? I love dancing in my room when I go have a shower. I put Tomorrowland on and I'm partying like I'm in Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I came across Ecstatic Dance,
yeah,
which is sober chimp dancing, right? It's like Tomorrowland.
Literally that.
So Tomorrowland sober. And is Tomorrowland sober? You're not allowed alcohol there?
I don't know, actually.
Anyway, I came across Ecstatic Dance. I'm like, oh my God, I'm almost 31. And I finally come across my dream, which is to dance like a chimp,
yeah,
with other chimps.
It's great.
And not give a fuck.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, I was the same, actually. That's really interesting. Maybe we were all little ecstatic dancers when we were younger without realising. I was the same. I mean, I actually took people moving out of the way as an audience, but I don't think that was. And I was drinking, so I for sure wasn't dancing. You know, my chimp was quite drunk. But my chimp also thought she was the best dancer on the dance floor.
She was the best dancer.
She was. She totally was.
Even if
she was perhaps the most wild.
Yeah. Like statistically, even though, you know, that person might not be the best dancer, if there's like strictly judges saying actually yeah, you're an 8 and they're a 10, it's not about that. It's the confidence you yeah feel from believing you're the best singer, yeah, the best dancer, the best podcaster, even yeah though I might not be. That's not the point. It's how do I walk around knowing or thinking that I am. My feeling, how do I get that feeling? Whether it's a lie or not, doesn't matter. As long as it's not affecting other people, walking around like, I'm this dancer, I can sing. That's different, right? Getting in someone's face. But walking around in your head like, fucking hell, I'm Beyonce right now. How does that make you feel? That's your own unique feeling that you've created through self-belief. And that's why it doesn't matter.
Yeah, agreed. And ecstatic dance is all about it just being your journey, but in a collective way. So it's so you can immerse yourself in your own experience as much as you want, can't you? Or/and be as conscious as you want of the other people in the room or the space with you, but be taking that energy for your own experience. Because no one cares about what each other are doing, do they? It doesn't matter. You can be a sober drunk chimp and do your wild Beyonce dancing and nobody gives a crap because they're all doing it too.
One of the things we did right is we all put blindfolds on.
Yeah.
And we were doing
yeah
this.
Yeah, we did.
Tantric.
No, we closed our eyes. Sorry, Karen.
This tantric animal dance thing. So we're literally making animal noises and sort of like just sort of doing this right.
Yeah.
No one can see. Everyone's got blindfolds on.
Yeah.
All you can hear is like, it's like a zoo. Everyone's going, animals. Like the whole point is about releasing your animal. Yeah. And you're going like, right? And everyone's laughing. You can hear all this noise and everyone's got blindfolds on. And you can do whatever and no one can see.
Yeah.
Like, what world does that exist?
Yeah.
Well, you can do that.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, even if you're at home, neighbours might hear, you know, whatever. Dog might get a little bit scared. But it doesn't exist. But getting to that point where you can do that so freeingly, like, you're not, you know, on the dance floor.
Yeah.
When you're drunk, it means that you don't really give a shit. You can't really feel the nervous energy of people judging you. So you just do it even more. But, you know, the point is that when you can get your body to that state with alcohol or not, you still got to that state. Like, you remember those experiences through being on a drug or alcohol, even if you feel like shit the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's great. I love it. I really want to do one this weekend. There is one on Friday, but I have a child. But maybe, you know, 3 is not too old to, not too young to go to ecstatic dance, right?
You're never too old to do anything that puts yourself first.
Right, agreed.
How you doing for time?
Yes, I probably should. Oh yeah, 1 o'clock.
Right, anything you want to promote or anything before we turn off?
So, make sure you come to our Mindset Unlimited Festival on the 14th of September in Wokingham at Elmsfield. Mindsetunlimited.co.uk.
Okay.
We got heaps of sound baths as well leading up to them. And yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Listening, if you like this episode, please remember to subscribe, turn the bell notifications on, like the episode, and comment below. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's YesKingOliver. Take a look at the other videos to your side. And if you just want to listen to this podcast, you can do so on Apple and Spotify and most other platforms by going to talkwitholiver.com.